Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, two referendums are set to take place on the 8th of March, addressing the recognition and support of families and the role of women and men in society. The first referendum aims to amend Article 41.2 of the Constitution to recognise all families, including those based on durable relationships, providing legal acknowledgement for diverse family structures. The second seeks to amend what has been described as outdated and sexist language in Article 41.2, challenging the notion that a woman's place is solely in the home, aiming for a more inclusive and modern perspective on gender roles. Well, I'm joined now by Michael McDool, former Attorney General and Justice Minister, and also Nasa Harrigan, Green Party TD for Dublin Central and member of the Oireachtas Gender Equality Committee. And Michael, I'll start with you on this because you're writing about it in the Irish Times today. And we'll start with Article 41.2 in relation to women in the home. Now, do you acknowledge that the language that's currently in the Constitution is archaic?
Yeah, I did in the article, Claire. It is a piece of 1930s language, and it to some extent reflects 1930s views. But fundamentally, though, what you said earlier, you know, that women's place is in the home, that is not stated at all. All it says is that where a mother, as opposed to a woman, is entitled to support from the state so as not to be obliged to work outside the home. That's all it says.
Mm-hmm. But if the language is archaic, why not take the opportunity to address it?
Because what's suggested here is, in fact, to take away the protection, the special protection for mothers who stay at home, which was relied on by the Supreme Court as far back as 1980 in the Murphy decision, which ended up with the doubling of tax allowances for married people. The Supreme Court actually relied on the particular provision, which is now to be changed, as part of its reasoning in saying that the tax regime at that time was discriminatory against married couples in particular and women who stayed in the home as well.
But you say that it has very limited effect, that it doesn't confine women's choices in any way, even psychologically. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, every woman now under equality law is entitled to compete equally with men in the workplace. They're entitled to work outside the home. They're entitled to... there is no discrimination against women who work outside the home.
Nasa, I imagine you disagree with most, if not all, of that.
Well, I mean, we could start with there's no discrimination against women outside the home as a statement, but I think maybe what's more important is to say that the reason to remove this or change this in the Constitution is that it has just been such a failure. I mean, it has failed women. It hasn't elevated women. In the last 100 years, the state has actively employed this to marginalise and to make women dependent on men for a long time. The welfare state was you know, sending our welfare payments to husbands. And I know there are women listening to this today who might have been forced out of work because of some of these clauses that formed the foundation. You know, our constitution forms the foundation of the development of many of our laws. And I think that there will be people listening to this today who remember being paid less, who remember, you know, their husbands being asked whether they could open a bank account or have a credit card. And this is where it comes from. And, you know, our constitution, I thought what was interesting about the article today is on one hand saying we don't need to change the Constitution, but on the other saying, well, look, it doesn't really make that much difference. And, you know, our Constitution is a living document and we should insist that it works hard for us and that it reflects our lives. And I it's not impotent. It's not irrelevant. And we should want our Constitution to listen to women today. And I think it does place an onus on women because in making a home or a family or in raising children, couples of whatever makeup, we often, let's face it, have to sacrifice our own aims and our own goals for the care of others. But our constitution currently and explicitly locates that responsibility with women. And I think that does two things. It underwrites the pressure on women, and I can tell you women really feel it, the societal pressure to be the primary provider of care, and it shapes the state and our laws around that. But it also dismisses the increasing role of men who are taking more of a role in the family. I know, you know, now that I'm a politician, my husband is doing a huge amount more care in the home. Mm. And it's not fair to men to do that.
And stopped women in the modern day from working or from allowing men to take over caring duties if required or if they desire to do so?
No, I think this, you know, the article is there knowing in its setting up this as a question of whether the Constitution explicitly stops women from doing anything. But of course, nobody was saying that that was the issue. The Citizens' Assembly didn't suggest that it's stopping women doing anything. The Gender Equality Committee didn't suggest that it stops women from doing anything. But it is archaic, it is patriarchal, and it is rooted in religious dogma. And it does frame our lives. The Constitution does frame our lives. It frames our law. And I can tell you, you know, as any working woman or any mother of a disabled child, for example, there is an expectation by the state that women do care, and they will care in the home, and that they will care 24/7 with scant recognition, to be perfectly honest with you. And it has, over many decades, framed the law around this. And I think it's time to expand that now, to recognise care, but recognise that there are many people in our society, men and women, who care in all sorts of ways. It's not just based around marriage. It's not just based around children. We're caring for parents. We're caring for loved ones. We're caring for chosen families.
Okay, Michael, can I come back to you on a point that NASA made, that our constitution is a living document, and that we cannot argue that it is irrelevant and impotent.
But it isn't impotent, and I've just told you that when the Supreme Court came to consider the tax laws, income tax laws, they relied on this specific article to say that as part of their reasoning, to say that the anti-marriage tax laws at the time were unconstitutional. But I mean, NASA is conceding one point which I made in the article, and that is that nobody is prevented from doing anything by this article. But what it does do, and that it commits the state to supporting women who do choose freely to stay in the home and who want to stay in the home.
But you could argue, Michael, that it perpetuates the traditional gender role in the Constitution.
But it could be
the reason that maternity leave is provided for women on a fully paid basis for a set time, but there's no equivalent paternity leave for men for the same period of time.
Well, I mean, all of those things, by the way, can be dealt with by ordinary laws. I mean, the Constitution doesn't dictate any law in relation to social welfare. All it does is prohibit the state from neglecting women who choose as mothers to stay at home to look after their children from being unfairly treated. And that's all it actually does. And NASA correctly says, you know, that she herself hasn't been in any sense interfered with in her choice to become a public representative and to work to some extent outside the home and to share her domestic life with her husband in a manner that reflects her choices. But this changing this particular article won't change that at all. It's entirely symbolic.
I go back to this line which I quoted earlier. It does not confine women's choices in any way, even psychologically. How do you know that?
Well, I'm saying that NASA, for instance, is not psychologically affected in becoming a TD by the fact that this
particular... Thank you for saying that, Senator, but I would remind you that I gave up work in 2016 for quite a number of years because the state did not provide, you know, affordable childcare and has not done so for decades. And I think these are the kind of things that shape our society. The fact that we don't fund childcare, that we don't fund those kind of services, that, for example, you know, you can put your travel expenses on your car. If you're a local representative, that can be an expense, but your childcare can't. I think those are the kind of things that, you know, this kind of language in our law and in our constitution, it breeds a kind of environment of, well, it, the onus is on women. I gave up a job I loved very, very much because I couldn't make it work. And this kind of language created an environment where I couldn't make it work no matter how hard I tried.
Well, with respect to you, NASA, this particular provision did not in any way affect your decision. It didn't.
But it didn't.
This provision didn't do it. The lack of childcare facilities may have done so, but changing this provision...
Okay, but decades of welfare payments going to husbands, that's why we don't have good childcare.
But sorry, that's gone, as you know. And you're pointing to all sorts of things that happened in the past, like the marriage bar. The marriage bar is gone. It cannot come back. It's constitutionally prohibited. It could not come back.
The pay gap is still there. So the pay gap is
not going to be dealt with by removing this particular article. It has nothing to do with this particular article.
The pay gap would be very effectively addressed by making it easier for women to go outside the home and making it more societally acceptable for men to stay in the home.
Well, Nasa, can I ask you about that point, which Michael is touching on there? Like, what would it achieve to accept this change to the Constitution? What difference would it make in reality and in practical terms?
I think, you know, look, I have to acknowledge the Senator's very long expertise in law here, but in my short time as a legislator, the amount of times that I've been told something that I want to do can't be done because it's unconstitutional, or that, you know, we're creating a law in the very specific way that we're creating it because it aligns with the Constitution. Our Constitution is the bedrock on which all of our law is created. And the fact that this clause focuses women and locates the responsibility for care with women is flawed, and it does marginalise women, it does make us dependent, and it does shape our law. And for that reason, it is very, very important that we change it. And for the best reason of all, which is that it has failed. It has failed to protect women.
Can we move to the other referendum?
Hasn't failed women, because when the Supreme Court came to decide to look at the income tax system, it specifically relied on this provision to say...
You're talking about one judgment. I'm talking about the experience of women in this country.
But I'm talking about women in every corner of this island at NASA who, prior to that Supreme Court decision, were faced with discriminatory anti-family tax, income tax measures.
The very same clause was used to set up the social welfare system in the 1930s to pay social welfare directly to husbands. So it's not the arbiter there. And what you're doing is you're pointing to one very specific judgment and ignoring the actual lived experience of women in Ireland.
Well, I'm saying very simply that there are many, many women in Ireland who do not want to be forced out of the family home where they're looking after their children by economic necessity, and that this particular provision obliges the state to support them. That's all.
And does it?
It does. Yes, of course it does. Through the tax system, through social welfare, through child benefit, through maternity benefit. Of course it does.
So any woman who is currently working has a choice. There's no economic concern there, that they have a choice to stay at home.
The economic barrier that they face at the moment is the absence of state-provided childcare, and that has nothing to do with the choice that women make to stay at home and look after their children.
Can we move on to the other referendum that voters will be asked to make a decision on? This relates to how we recognise a more inclusive definition of the family, and it arose from a Citizens' Assembly recommendation, and that said the article should be amended to protect family life not limited to the marital family. So, Michael, what are your concerns about that proposal?
Well, what it's doing, in fact, is saying that the Constitution at the moment says that the family is based on marriage. And it's saying, well, the family can be based on other enduring relations. But there are problems which attach to that. I mean, what is an enduring relationship? That's a matter that the courts will ultimately have to decide. But the Supreme Court has already said it doesn't have to be a permanent relationship. Does it involve, say, three people living together, two women and one man, or one man and two women? Is this to be afforded the same status as the family based on marriage? What is the reason for saying that the commitment which is involved in marriage, and it's no longer indissoluble, we have had divorce for a number of years, but that the commitment that is made between a couple to each other and to any children they may have, that that is to be reduced to the state of equated to other enduring relations.
Okay, so Nasa, can you explain that to us? And is there an ambiguity? Is Michael right to have a concern there?
Well, first of all, it's important to say that the Constitution will hold on to its recognition of the special status of the family as a core building block for our community. And it also recognises the special status of marriage, just in a different clause. But there are, look, the reality is, as I said, the Constitution is a living document. And there are so many types of families in Ireland now. There are many children who grow up in households where mam and dad are not married because they choose not to be. Or it's just mammy, or it's just daddy, or their granny, or their uncle is bringing them up. All of those children deserve to be protected by the Constitution. All of those families deserve to be recognised. I have friends who, you know, they are couples with long-term commitment to each other who aren't married. Maybe they don't have kids, but they are certainly loving families. They're nothing less than a family because they're not married. Mm-hmm. And the Constitution needs to change and reflect what our society actually is, because otherwise it does become a dead document.
But there are big implications, though, if that wording is changed for the state, for the Exchequer, because married couples enjoy, for example, beneficial tax treatment.
Well, I think the minister was very clear when he was introducing this in the Dáil that there is a recognition of marriage in the rest of the Constitution that will allow, which will not disrupt the recognition of it in terms of tax. But I think that it is meaningful that we expand the recognition of families. And you can see this partly in the debate around, for example, surrogacy, you know, those kind of discussions around as marriages do break up and or people are adopted or people, you know, have chosen families, that we expand that recognition so that, you know, there's more people protected under the definition.
What is the problem with that, Michael?
Well, I mean, there's a whole series of implications for this. I mean, for instance, you know, three-party relationships, what are the implications if you recognise them for family law, for pensions law, for immigration law? Who are dependents for immigration, for citizenship and nationality, where at the moment, if you are the child of a marriage, you have succession or citizenship rights, succession law, and going back to the tax law issue. All of those issues are significant, and the minister may say that he's preserving the special position of the family, but what he's actually saying is that other relationships are now to be equated with the family without specifying what those relationships are.
But we can't ignore, Michael, that children are being raised in many cases in this country by people who aren't their birth mother or their birth father. Those people surely deserve to have that family unit recognised.
Well, first of all, that can be done by ordinary law and is done by ordinary law. For instance, we have cohabitation entitlements for people who are long-term cohabitants. We can do all of those things. But what this provision is effectively doing, it's saying, you know, that the commitment, the legal commitment that people enter into when they marry, even if in the end their marriage ends up in divorce, that legal commitment is not especially important. And I believe that that's wrong. I also believe that the UN Human Rights Charter talks about the right of men and women to marry and to found a family. I don't think this is an unusually antiquated or old-fashioned Irish idea. Yes, of course, there are what we call families outside marriage. And yes, of course, there are people who are in that position. But it's a different matter completely to say that marriage, especially now...
NASA, last word, go ahead.
In no way does this repudiate marriage or undermine marriage. All it does is say that there are more versions of a family than those that are based on marriage. And if we can use the law courts and we can use legislation to define what a durable relationship is, then there should be no issue.
All right, we'll leave it there for now. Michael McDool and NASA Harrigan, thank you very much for joining us. And you're no doubt going to hear plenty more of those discussions before we get to the 8th of March. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.